Welcome back to another episode of Working 24/8, the legacy of NBA superstar Kobe Bryant. This episode 2 is about his rookie season, how he was traded from the Charlotte Hornets to the Los Angeles Lakers, things that happened during his rookie season, and I'm excited to get into this episode, so let's get right to it. So the Lakers are trying to make a leap from first or second round playoff to true contention and have their sights set on the 24-year-old superstar free agent Shaquille O'Neal. And this was before max contracts ever existed, so superstars could make as much money as teams were willing to offer. So as long as it adhered to salary cap rules, it was all good to go. And so as a result, the teams in the West needed to clear off some salaries in the books to make the best possible contract offer. So this offer was made to Shaq during the 1996 free agency period. So the starting center Vlade Divac made the most sense to trade, since Shaq would take his place and he was set to make around $5 million in the 1996-97 NBA season. And this is nearly 20% of the projected about $25 million salary cap for the upcoming season. So the West found a suitor in the Charlotte Hornets, who had the 13th pick, but there was no guarantee that Kobe would last until then. John Calipari had recently been hired as a New Jersey Nets coach and became enamored with Kobe during his workouts. Like, he just loved watching Kobe and how he worked out, his work ethic, etc. So the Nets held the 8th pick, and Calipari gave serious consideration to drafting Kobe. But Kobe and his agent, who at the time was Arne Tellem, had their sights set on the Lakers and completely ignored Calipari. They told the former University of Massachusetts coach that Kobe would forego the NBA and play professionally in Italy if the Nets had tried to take him, because Italy was where his father, Joe Bryant, played, and it's where they were from. Kobe's an Italian. So their gambit worked, and the New Jersey Nets drafted Kerry Kittles instead. And the Hornets then selected Kobe at number 13 before immediately trading him to the Lakers for Vlade Divac. And this was the only year in which a prospect of Kobe's stature could have fallen that far in the draft. So his talent was well regarded around the league, but there was no precedent for a 17-year-old guard in the NBA. And the risk for GMs shied away from selecting him. So even the idea of 19-year-olds being drafted after a token year of college was not the norm like it is today. And because basketball was so different back then. The first modern spacing principles were still a decade away, so the mid-90s basketball was basically 3-out, 2-in motion offenses, mostly operating 20 feet and in. And there were at least 4 bodies around the paint at all times in half-court situations. And those tight quarters put a premium on size and physicality. These conditions weren't friendly to teenagers, especially guards. Kevin Garnett became the first preps to pros player in 20 years when he was drafted 5th in 1995. But no perimeter player had ever made the leap before Kobe decided to forego the opportunity to play at Duke and enter in the 1996 draft. So his first few games he didn't really draw a lot of fans. And long before Lakers rookies inspired hordes of fans to descend upon the Las Vegas Summer Leagues was a quaint event held at the Long Beach Pyramid. If you don't know what the Long Beach Pyramid, it's literally their gym looks like a pyramid. And the crowds at the time weren't really that huge. And Lakers fans were focused on the pursuit of Shaq. And then the Summer League wasn't really a big deal as it is today. So Kobe was great in those games, or at least in the compressed box scores in which newspapers didn't really mention him at all. He cooked Alvin Gentry's Detroit Pistons for 27 points in his debut, and then dropped 36 in another game. So he was doing pretty well. And then the team traveled to China, and he scored 22 points a game there. So he was playing with and against players who were several years older than him, and then at that, dominating the stat sheet. The Lakers signed Shaq on July 18th, 1996, and the Shaq-Kobe Lakers were then born. Except they weren't thought of in tandem at first, Kobe was more of a novelty than a superstar at that point. He was a boy wonder, as some might call it, the kid who got his doctorate degree as a teenager. He was the, quote, Doogie Howser MD of the NBA. He wasn't even supposed to be in the rotation. Not only did Van Exel and Jones have the starting backcourt locked down, the Lakers also signed Byron Scott, who, quite hilariously, ended up being Kobe's head coach before Kobe retired, and Jerome Kersey to fill the backup wing positions. So Kobe was supposed to watch, learn, and be patient while the veterans went to work. And this is part of what Kobe signed up for when he muscled his way onto the Lakers. He likely would have received immediate playing time had he gone to Calipari and the Nets, but the Lakers had immediate aspirations whether Shaq signed or not. They were a team on the rise and an exciting group of 20-somethings that made the playoffs the previous two seasons. Even those humble plans got off to a rocky start. Kobe broke his wrist in the pickup game right before training camp and then suffered another injury that kept him sidelined for most of the preseason. He played one non-descriptive 6-minute, 22-second shift in his NBA debut, and then that was that. He didn't score and only took one shot. He lived that 11th man's life of filling in the temporarily vacated spots in the rotation for the first 30 games of his career. 6 minutes here, 8 minutes there, 60 minutes another night because someone picked up 3 quick fouls. So he wasn't really getting the PT that he really wanted, but doesn't that happen to every rookie? The NBA has a way of illuminating the bad habits of every prestigious talent, and Kobe was no exception. His skills were polished well beyond his years because he literally went from high school to the NBA. Not many people could do that. But he didn't know which ones were appropriate for each situation. He spent a lot of his rookie season double-clutching his way out of compromising positions that he put himself in. His twisting, bending contortions weren't just an escape for a young athletic player who'd ever penetrated into the paint. This was only a precursor of his upcoming dominance in the league, as everyone knows. I was watching a video that where Kobe drove to his right out of a triple threat position and then was swatted away by Jim Jackson as he hand-checked him, and then Joe Klein in the paint as Kobe took off of one left foot. And a lot of Kobe's rookie moves were one-foot jumps into traffic, and then he'd get knocked off balance by an incidental contact. But seeing him as a rookie, this also illustrated his ability to disassociate his movements, a necessary attribute for any young Mamba, quote, with designs on slithering to the basket. He then whipped his right leg around after elevating off his left foot and then twisted his hips around the basket while his upper body still faced the corner. Kobe didn't have massive hands that Jordan was blessed with and needed two hands to control the ball while making these contortions. He then brought it he brought it all the way behind his right ear to both draw Klein's contest and protect the ball from it. Klein then descended, and Kobe used his discrepancy in their leaping abilities to fully align himself with the basket before scooping it up and in. Kobe moved in segments, which gave him the capacity to make any shot from any angle in any situation. He then spent the rest of his career practicing any shot from any angle, and then ultimately fulfilled the shot-making potential that he flashed as a rookie. It's important to note that Kobe Bryant, as a rookie, had a nasty crossover, and then back to when that was the go-to move for many of the league's prolific scorers, he'd sell his drive in either direction by dribbling and loading up his weight on one foot before quickly planting his other foot and crossing his dribble beneath the defender's hands and close to his body. Then Kobe finally got the chance to brandish his gifts in an increased role, beginning in around mid-January against the Pistons, and Grant Hill was a superstar of the Pistons at that time. So Byron Scott and Kersey were healthy, but Kobe dazzled in a double overtime loss, scoring 21 points in 32 minutes. That night marked a milestone in his young career. It was the first of many times that he would lead the Lakers in scoring. So the head coach at the time was Del Harris, and he began to give Kobe a little bit of a leeway after that. He finally proved himself, so why not continue to get an opportunity, right? He'd still get pulled if he wasn't playing well, of course, but And Del Harris would let him continue to play if he had it going. And so from there, Kobe averaged 11.8 points in 23 minutes in the nine-game stretch leading up to the All-Star break. And this was the first consistent minutes and production of his career. He was the star of the undercard during the All-Star festivities in Cleveland, winning the slam dunk contest and scoring 31 points in the rookie challenge game. So he clearly stood out, not only in the slam dunk contest, winning as a rookie, but scoring 31 points. That just proves that he was one of the better rookies in the league. But Kobe's role continued to fluctuate after the All-Star break, including a couple of the games in which he didn't play at all. He regained a lot of minutes in late March, and that continued through the end of the regular season. But he was on the outside looking in when Del Harris tightened up his rotation for the playoffs. Kobe played just around 46 seconds of garbage time in his playoff debut against the Trailblazers, and only got significant minutes in Game 3, which was the Lakers' lone loss of the series. The Lakers won 56 games during the regular season, but that was only good enough for the fourth seed in a top-heavy Western Conference, and that meant a second-round date with the Utah Jazz. At the time, John Stockton and Karl Malone had been together since Kobe was literally a first grader living in Italy, and the Lakers were no match for the precision that accompanied Utah's experience. They quickly fell behind 0-2 in the series, with Game 3 slated for Los Angeles. Eddie Jones had been held scoreless in 28 minutes in Game 2, leading Del Harris to turn to Kobe in an increased role as the Lakers return home. They played inspired defense in the first half, holding the Jazz to just 36 points, and Karl Malone only went 1 for 13 from the field. And the Lakers held a 13-point lead heading into the fourth quarter, when Kobe proceeded to put his first playoff opponent away. He drew 12 free throws in that final game, flashing the unguardability that came to define his career. Shaq got ejected, not surprised there, with seven minutes left in the game, but it didn't matter. The Lakers had blown the game open and got their first and only win of the series. Van Exel struggled to get clean looks, as many small point guards still do in the playoffs, and Jones had the size to thrive in the postseason, but not the ball-handling ability. Kobe gave the Lakers an explosive perimeter threat that could complement Shaq in the post, but he was still a teenager navigating uncharted waters. Utah clamped down on Kobe in Game 4, sending additional attention his way. He tried to overcome their approach with raw talent, but consistently made incorrect reads on the defense that led to 5 turnovers and an unfortunate 3-for-9 shooting in 28 minutes. And so the Jazz won that game 110-95, giving them a commanding 3-1 lead. Series headed back to Utah for Game 5, where the Jazz crowd literally was out for blood. They held an 8-point lead at halftime, and Kobe was held scoreless in his 9 minutes. The second half had an air of inevitability that superior Utah team would close out the series in the next 24 minutes of action. Kobe did remain scoreless after missing two shots in the last 2 minutes and 32 seconds of the third quarter, but the Lakers trimmed that lead to 5 heading into the fourth after their defense held Utah to just 13 points. And the fourth quarter was a completely different story. Kobe had drawn the attention of Utah's bigger, more accomplished wing defenders in the aftermath of his Game 3 outburst. He began the fourth by cooking Shandon Anderson with a right-to-left crossover, followed by a behind-the-back dribble that created separation for an and-one jumper, which he was pretty good at. And his 9-point fourth quarter culminated in a dunk that gave the Lakers a 3-point lead, but Utah fought back to tie the game after Shaq fouled out with 1:46 left. And that wasn't surprising, because Shaq is Shaq, and everyone knows that Shaq is just a walking foul or a walking ejection. Sorry, Shaq. I do love you, but yeah. When the score was tied at 89, Del Harris did not drop a play. He simply gave the ball to Kobe. And there was a situation where getting that last shot was of the utmost importance, and those moments were usually reserved for the guy who's most capable of getting his own look. And that was 18-year-old Kobe Bryant. So, as a rookie, Kobe got a kind of started off slow, but clearly in the playoffs, he did step up to the occasion, and he basically proved himself to not only his coach, but to the world, and he was used to doing that. So, as a rookie, Kobe had a more than average rookie season, and there's a lot more to it than that, but we only got 15 minutes, so don't really know where to go from here, but I know that we can continue in episode 3, but that's just a little of what Kobe did as a rookie, and the Bulls did end up beating Utah in the 1997 NBA Finals, and that was when Jordan had his iconic flu game. Kobe had many of those, but the Lakers had next, and so did Kobe Bryant. So Kobe Bryant always had that Mamba mentality of wanting to do better and do more as a player, and he did that. And you'll see in next week's episode, as we go deeper into his legacy while he was still in the league, that Kobe Bryant is just that man. So thank you for listening in. Sorry for the short time. I wish I had more than 15 minutes, but I appreciate you guys tuning in. I'm excited to share more with you next episode about Kobe Bryant's life and legacy. All right, Mamba out.